When it comes to maximizing time in the uplands, without fail, Onyx Hunt is my most valuable tool. From planning my next hunt through a new bird cover to navigating in the field, Onyx Hunt is truly with me wherever I go. With detailed mapping and satellite imagery, along with a multitude of map layers from land access to forestry and habitat information, and easy-to-use tools to mark, measure, and catalog important information, Onyx Hunt seamlessly integrates digital scouting with boots-on-the-ground time in the field. With offline mapping and Apple CarPlay integration, you are free to explore the wild landscapes our beloved upland birds inhabit. Planning your next move in the uplands begins with knowing where you stand, and for me, that starts and stops with Onyx Hunt. Download the Onyx Hunt app today and use the promo code BSP20 to save 20% on your Onyx Hunt subscription. When the miles rack up faster than your flush count, that's when you'll truly appreciate your hunting vest from Final Rise. Built for the uplands and proudly sewn in the USA, the complete lineup of hunting vests from Final Rise, from their all-new Summit XT down to the minimalist Sidekick system, are all built upon the foundational load-bearing waist belt and low-profile shoulder strap system, which allow you to carry all the gear you need and do so comfortably while maintaining your ability to move freely and perform when you need to most. With a complete lineup of accessories and newly released performance field apparel, Final Rise has the gear you need to help you get the most out of every mile and every flush. Final Rise gear is built for the uplands. Get yours today at finalrise.com.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This episode of the Bird Shop Podcast is presented by Onyx Hunt, Final Rise, and Upland Gun Company. On this episode of the show, we're back with Cody Simons of Sitka Gear. Thanks for tuning in to episode number 254. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Bird Shop Podcast. Thanks for joining us today. In just a moment, we're going to jump back into our conversation with Cody Simons of Sitka Gear, transitioning a little bit from bird dogs and double guns into a little bit more apparel and gear-related stuff, but plenty more to come with Cody. But just a couple of quick mentions first. Thanks to, of course, Patreon patrons of the Bird Shop Podcast, those of you out there making voluntary contributions in support of the show to keep these conversations coming your way. Patrons are eligible for giveaways, some bonus content, and some Bird Shop Podcast can coolers and stickers. You can learn more and sign up at patreon.com/birdshot. Don't forget, you can always use the promo code BSP20 to save 20% on your next Onyx Hunt subscription. And one last thing before we jump back in with Cody, which is somewhat relevant to our conversation today. It'll come up in my conversation with Cody, but I'm staring out the window. It finally looks like winter here in Duluth, Minnesota. Been waiting and waiting for it, although I wasn't exactly begging for it to show up until the ruffed grouse season officially closed in Wisconsin last Sunday. Did get out for one more hunt before all was said and done, and I could not have asked for a better day in the woods. It was as enjoyable as I imagined it could be on January 5th, walking around in the grouse woods with just a dusting of snow. Temps were, I don't remember, they were in the 30s. I was warm, and we saw lots of birds. Got some dog work, got a couple shot opportunities, and saw plenty more birds fly away, which is always a good thing this time of year. And now we are on the brink of our first real stretch of really cold weather here in grouse country, which had me a little nervous. Still does, I guess, but we did get some much needed snow this week. Probably, I don't know, 6 inches of fluff at least. A couple different snowfalls, and it was snowing today, and so the woods are at least snow-covered, and there seems to be some insulation out there for the birds. I talked to Jerry Havel of Pine Ridge Grouse Camp earlier today. He echoed the same thing, got some snow coverage over there as well, so that was good. It's not perfect when we're looking at a week of sub-zero temps, but at least it's something for all those birds that are still out there in the woods. Anyways, that's a report from Grouse Country. And with that in mind, I wanted to mention, I put up a post on Instagram a couple of weeks ago now, actually, really when I was expecting to be hunting in more cold weather, looking for cold weather shooting gloves, which is, as I found out, a common consideration for folks. Upland seasons run into the late season, and oftentimes, this year probably being one of the biggest exceptions, oftentimes we're hunting in much colder weather towards the latter end of the season. But this season was so mild that my usual struggles with cold hands, cold fingers on the shotgun were a lot less of an issue this year, which I was not complaining about. But anyways, Cody and I will talk about this a little bit on the episode, but I wanted to just mention that I got a bunch of feedback from folks when I put that poll up on Instagram. It wasn't a poll, actually. I was just asking for cold weather glove recommendations, which, you know, we can't wear big puffy mittens and have our hands in hand muffs, which kind of solves the cold hands problem. We got to be gripping the shotguns and be ready to shoot and that sort of thing. And I think that I have Raynaud syndrome. Hope I'm saying that right. I've never been diagnosed or anything, but it seems to be what I struggle with, where my hands kind of almost unpredictably, I mean, it happens because of the cold, but it's can kind of come on in a hurry, and it just, your fingers kind of lose circulation, sensitivity, and my hands are basically worthless. And the only way out of it for me is to basically really warm my hands up inside of a hand muff or something, or to get my circulation going enough to where it kind of seems to pump the blood back in my fingertips, and then I'll be good. So for me, it's the beginning of the hunt where I'm gripping the steel, the barrels, and that sort of thing, and my hands will go numb, and then it's kind of this battle of trying to warm the hands up, get circulated enough to where they come back to life, if that makes sense. And I heard from a lot of people that struggle from the same thing. It doesn't seem to be an uncommon problem, and again, I've never been diagnosed, so I don't really know the specifics of it all, other than what the symptoms appear to be for me. And anyways, with shooting gloves, you're looking for something that is relatively thin, that can maintain dexterity, but can potentially insulate you and warm you up. And I thought for a while, and it still may be the case, that maybe eventually a heated glove, kind of like a really heated glove, eliminates this problem. I've experimented a little bit. I think one pair of heated gloves that I bought, I was trying to buy a thin pair, and they're kind of a liner glove, and they do work, but the heat that they pump out is not incredible, and the wind kind of goes right through those gloves they're kind of meant to be a liner. So maybe that was my mistake, but that didn't seem to be a real solution. They're also kind of a pain. The battery is on your, it's like a big cuff, and the battery is under your wrist, and I don't know. It's not a perfect solution yet. I've seen some other pairs of heated gloves that maybe would be worth trying, but again, this year just wasn't that big of a factor for me. So I did ask for recommendations, and as you'll hear on the episode today, the most recommended glove was the Sitka Gunner Glove, which is a leather shooting glove with a Gore-Tex Infinium membrane, which is basically a windproof membrane inside the glove. So it's a leather shooting glove with a windproof membrane. And that was the most often recommended pair of gloves I got from all of the Instagram followers that responded to that. And I did in fact get a pair. Cody sent me a pair that I was able to utilize on a number of hunts late season. And my experience with them was positive. They're certainly more glove than my everyday leather shooting glove that I wear every day, whether it's 70 degrees or down to about 30 degrees. And that's kind of the cutoff for me. The probably upper 20s, I could probably get away with my leather shooting gloves, knowing that the beginning of the hunt is I'm going to have cold hands. But after having utilized the Sitka Gunner gloves, you've got pretty good dexterity. There's minimal dexterity loss, I would say, compared to my regular leather shooting gloves. But the windproof membrane does seem to help. And that was also something that was recommended to me by a couple of folks in the glove, cold weather shooting glove poll, was look for something windproof because that will help. And I think it does. So anyways, The Sitka Gunner Glove worked for me. I used them a handful of times, and they were an improvement over some of the other stuff I had been using. Again, I don't know that there's a solution for me that completely eliminates the problem, but it definitely was lessened in using the Sitka Gunner Glove. So I was pleased by that. I also got a lot of recommendations for Hestra gloves. That's H-E-S-T-R-A, which I've seen before. They're kind of a skiing glove. They seem to be a reputable quality product manufacturer. I don't own any Hestra gloves, but I have looked at them before, I think for skiing. But they have lots of different options, and those were, I think, a clear second best recommendation as far as number of responses for Hestra gloves. That was kind of the clear second place holder in that poll that I did. So I've not purchased any Hestra gloves yet. I may look at them, but now that I think hunting season has pretty much wound down for me, specifically cold weather hunting, it's not on the top of the priority list at this point, but Hestra gloves were also recommended quite a bit. The other glove that I did purchase was, that former guest of the show, Jordan Wilcher. We've had him on talking chucker hunting and fitness, if you'll recall. Jordan was a big advocate. He said he suffered from similar cold hands. Again, I don't know that anybody's immune to it, maybe. Actually, our guest today, Cody Simons, doesn't sound like he had too many issues with cold hands. But anyways, Jordan recommended anything with Gore-Tex Infinium, being the windproof membrane, and then a hand warmer on the back of the hands inside the gloves, if you can fit it in there. That was kind of the best he could do. So I did go out and purchase a pair of mittens that I think I found these on my own. I don't recall, actually. They're made by Gore, actually, a parent company of Sitka, which I recently learned. And they are a winter mountain biking glove, as best I can tell. We have a lot of mountain biking trails around here. See lots of people out riding the fat bike tires. I've thought about doing myself. I don't have one yet, but I guess now I have a pair of gloves that I could use. They are essentially a relatively low profile mitten that has your index finger, or aka trigger finger, separated from the other three. So you got your middle ring and pinky fingers in one. They're kind of like the lobster claw mitts, if you're familiar with those. You see them on a lot of cross-country skiing gloves. This one puts your three fingers together and your index finger or trigger finger, which the purpose of these gloves is so you can use the shifters on your mountain bike, fat tire bike, and they have the windproof membrane, which is important when you're riding a bike in the winter and your hands are up on the handlebars and taking all that wind. So I figured I would give those a try. I went out and found them kind of on sale. I think it was around Black Friday, and I grabbed those. They were not cheap, but they were discounted at least. So I bought those. I don't even know, some random website bought them, and I only used them once, but they did in fact work. So when I went out that one day, I bet it was mid-20s. We had just got a little bit of snow, actually. Mid-20s, I went out. I wore those gloves, those Gore mittens, for the first part of my hunt. I ran Hartley, and my plan was to run him for 45 minutes to maybe an hour. And we kind of did a little short out and back, and not a lot happened. But at about the furthest point out away from the truck we were planning to go, Hartley went on point. I walked in. Saw the grouse on the ground. It flushed, gave me a nice opportunity, and I wasn't even really thinking about the mittens, but I threw that 28 gauge up, and down came the grouse. So I successfully bagged a grouse with those mittens. So that was a good first test of those. And by the time I got back to the truck, we kind of basically headed back after that, good bird contact, and had one in the bag, and went back to get Rose to run out the rest of our daylight that day. And by the time I got back to the truck, my hands were heated up at that point. I think, you know, somewhat due to the mittens, but somewhat due to hiking and getting the circulation going. So that's kind of a normal rhythm for us. And when I got back to the truck, I swapped those mittens out for the Sitka Gunner gloves, and I wore the Sitka Gunner gloves the rest of the day without issue, with good, relatively warm and circulating hands. So that seemed to be a pretty good combo for me. And if a cold weather hunting opportunity presented itself again, which I imagine it will, maybe might not be till next season, but that will probably be my go-to tandem of gloves. Kind of an expensive set of cold weather shooting gloves if you're going to go out and buy those two pairs of gloves, but they are two quality products that I would recommend if you're interested in something like that. And the last thing I will mention, which is probably the most interesting and clever recommendation that I got, and a lot less expensive if you just were looking to try something. But I got a recommendation from somebody that he was told, I think by a doctor or something, heat the blood going to your hands, not your hands. So the advice he was given was to take an old wool sock or something, if you got a wristband or something, and cut that off. So you just have a cuff, basically like a wrist cuff, slip that over your hand, put it around your wrist, and then slip a disposable hand warmer inside that cuff on the inside of your wrist. So you're heating the blood in your veins, in your wrist, that are going to your hands and fingertips. And if nothing else, I thought that sounded like the coolest hack. And so I immediately went downstairs, found a pair of wool socks. I was not really using a thin pair of wool socks, and cut those off. And I only tried this a couple times, and I wish I could say it worked as well as how cool it sounds, but it was not anything mind-blowing. I'll say that. I don't think it hurt, and I think it probably did benefit me. But again, given the conditions this late season, I didn't really put any of this stuff through extensive testing with enough frequency to really say one way or the other. So next week's gonna be really cold. I'll probably experiment with that a little bit while I'm just out walking the dogs and hopefully packing our snowshoe trails, as we're just about have enough snow to start doing that. And I'll keep experimenting. I don't know. I thought that was a cool piece of advice. He said he used that a lot for ice fishing, and very simple to get something to go around your wrist and just grab some disposable hand warmers, slip those in. That would be worth trying, I think, if you were really looking for a solution here. So that's the cold weather shooting glove / cold hands synopsis. And if you're hearing this and didn't see the Instagram thing and you've got other recommendations or anything like that, feel free to chime in and email those to me, nick@birdshotpodcast.com. I did get some other recommendations. There are some good quality gloves out there that other listeners have seen and used. And again, I don't know that there is a perfect solution that completely eliminates the problem, but there's some good products out there that can at least help and or mitigate the issue. And again, Cody and I will talk about it a little bit on the second half of our conversation today. With that said, let's jump back in and finish up our conversation with Cody Simons. Now, I did want to ask you, you mentioned I love the 7/8 ounce load coming out of the 16 gauge. What's your shot size? That's kind of your hun load you're referring to?
Yeah. I actually shoot most things with it. It's 7.5s, definitely more so for huns and sharptails and stuff, what I primarily set out for. I just got some 7s though that I haven't messed with. I just got a bag of 7s that I think will be pretty cool too. But yeah, I shoot 7.5s a lot. I don't pheasant hunt much as it is. I've shot pheasants with 7.5s. Usually I'll shoot like a 6 or something if I've got them. But yeah, 7.5s going, like I said, pretty slow. They're like 11.25 or 11.30 or something like that. Yep. So pretty light little 7/8 ounce.
That's 7.5. Relatively slow compared to what many people might be shooting. But that's kind of the point of it all is, nice, light, lesser payloads, you know, smaller payload than the gauge even is set up for, running at slow speeds, and you're doing just fine with it. Your guns are taking less abuse. You're taking less abuse. It's not always about bigger, faster, stronger when it comes to shotgunning.
Yeah, and I just realized that I actually have a 3/4 ounce charge bar, and I would like to load, after shooting a 28 so much and realizing that it's perfectly effective with 3/4 ounce shot. That loading a 3/4 ounce in the 16 gauge would probably be pretty cool, and less recoil, less everything, and probably pattern even pretty less, neat too.
Yeah. I think once you realize the effectiveness of those lesser, maybe that's kind of the eye opener. I mean, I guess it was for me when I started shooting my 28 gauge and just realizing that like I wasn't really giving up anything in the shots that I was choosing to take and how I go about it. The 3/4 ounces of shot is plenty. And so that's kind of an eye opener. And anytime you lessen the payload for that gauge, you in theory increase patterning efficiency, and there's some things to be gained, but I don't know how significant it is real world. Not that you can't shoot standard payloads, but yeah, I appreciate sort of experimenting in that direction versus the other direction.
For sure. Yep. The load that I'm shooting right now is patterning very neat out of both the 16s that I have. I don't have a whole lot of reason to change, but I don't know, something makes me want to make it lighter.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, it sounds like you're a little bit of a tinkerer, so I don't think that comes as any surprise.
Yep. For sure. I do have everything set up very neatly on the press right now, where like my stack height and like the crimps are looking nice on my load, so I probably don't need to go mess with it, but I probably will anyways.
What loader do you have?
Just the cheap, a mech, like a 600, the junior Mark IV or something.
The
most basic one you can get.
Single stage loader.
Most basic from mech anyhow, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's, okay. I think it's
fine. I don't know a whole lot about that. I think I'm going to have to talk to a couple guys and maybe do a podcast on sort of basics, but I've got, mine's similar. Mine's the Size Master. I don't even know what the difference is between the Size Master and the Junior, but I think they're kind of similar. But I got mine set up with the help of one of my kind of grouse hunting mentors around here, and have not touched it other than the basic setup, and haven't even really got into looking at like how to fine tune, tailor, and tweak it. Maybe that'll be an off season thing. But honestly, it's loading boxes of shells for me that I'm using and doing very well with in the woods. So I don't need to change anything, but I do want to learn a little bit more about it.
Yeah. It's not reloading. It's fun. And it's nice to just know, as long as you have the components on hand, like, you know, you can load up as many boxes as you need to finish the season or something like that. I got lucky when I happened to get into it, I found a ton of 16 gauge components. So I just like loaded up on it. So I have years worth of 16 gauge stuff to load. I guess powder might be the tough one. I need more powder, but that's always the tough one. But it's cool to have and know you can just work up some more ammo if you need it.
To complement your collection of your growing collection of vintage guns, you did add a modern Italian side by side that I know a little bit about. Just walk me through kind of what you were looking to build there, and then just kind of go through the specs of that gun, sort of why you set it up the way you did, and you now have it. So
so the first thing anyone ever asked me is why I did the Zeus and not the
Venus.
Venus. Yeah, I was gonna say Athena. Yep. Was like just the budget that I was working with, and it still has everything that I wanted. I definitely like the look of the Venus and everything, but so I went with the 28 gauge Zeus. 28 was just interesting to me. I shoot 16 a lot. I kind of enjoy shooting like the more odd load, not just like 12 or 20. So I wanted to go with 28, and being primarily a hunter, I thought it'd be perfect. talking with you, the weights would pan out kind of to where I want it to be, like around 6 pounds, and not be like super, super light, but not be, you know, heavy or anything. So 30 inch barrels. I did interchangeable chokes, which I remember you trying to talk me out of. So I did interchangeable chokes because I want to like turkey hunt with it. And I actually just texted you the other day saying I did change them, because when I was sharptail hunting, they were getting up really far and I just carry the chokes in my bag and I swapped chokes. I went from IC mod to mod approved mod, and started doing really well.
Okay.
Full coverage engraving, case colors, dual triggers. I really just kind of wanted it to look like it would have been kind of a classic, like American, like a cool American gun that you might find. Case colors, full coverage engraving, two triggers. I did a straight grip, and orange butt pad. I've always really liked orange butt pads. I think it was grade 2.5, 2.5 wood that I did on this one. And I've really enjoyed it. I did the 30 inch barrel. I'm a taller guy, 6'3", and hunting mostly the prairies and stuff like that, or like the mountains in Montana aren't necessarily thick. So did the 30 inch barrels, and I have a long length of pull and everything, so I feel like it kind of balanced out pretty neatly. I've been really enjoying it.
What's your length of pull, do you recall? Like just over 15 or something?
Yeah, I think it's 15 and like 3/16 or something like that. I think somewhere around there.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you did your fitting with that gun shop we were talking about, right? Hill Rod and Gun?
Yep. Yep, with Charlie there. He's a coach and a fitter and stuff. So went out and did a fitting. And yeah, best I can tell, it fits me really well. I've shot it like great from the moment I got it out of the box. Love
That's
it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and 28 has been surprising. I definitely thought I was going to feel like underpowered or undergunned or something if I got in a situation where I was shooting pheasants or shooting sharp tails a little farther out or something like that. I mean, still farther out. Yeah, that, you know, that's all relative. But I've had a great time with it. I picked up some just 2 3/4 inch sixes, and hunted a pheasant spot, when I was actually on my way back from a deer hunt, and was amazed at how effective it was shooting pheasants with a 28 gauge. Like it, I didn't feel like I lost anything going from my 16s, down to the 28 with shooting them. I know like range and all that, and you know,
sure,
density technically isn't what it is, but, with a 16, but
if you're picking your shots,
I really enjoyed it.
You can,
yeah, no doubt. I mean, yeah, you can't be shooting like flushing birds at like 50 yards or something like that. Like you still have to be taking good shots and all that, but, I haven't crippled any of the pheasants I shot on that trip. I didn't cripple or lose anything. They were all pretty well done for when the dogs picked them up. Same with huns and sharp tails. It's just, I know there's like a lot of weird like myth behind the 28, but, I have shot it really well, and really enjoyed it, especially on huns. It's exactly what I wanted for shooting huns.
Yeah. That's awesome. Obviously very fun for me to hear. That I love, you know, going from inception to actually finished product and you getting it and using it in the field. I mean, that never gets old for any of us.
Yeah.
Upland Gun Company, we love hearing those stories and seeing the guns go into the field.
Yep.
And the Italians love hearing that too. So
that's
cool. I like the 28 gauge for you, just again, because like you've got this vintage 16s and, you know, a 28 gauge is not really something that is a reality for most of us on the vintage market.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't make many. The price is exorbitant. So if you're going to go modern and build a side-by-side with the Italians like that, I think 28 gauge makes a ton of sense just to kind of fill in that gap and get you a little something different. That's cool.
No doubt. Yeah, I am loving it too. Like I said, I felt like I was going to maybe be giving something up, but man, I feel perfectly fine about shooting. I've shot all the species that I've hunted this year. I have shot one or more with a 28, and it's all been perfectly fine and really enjoying it. Glad I went with a 28, and not, I was going back and forth between 28 and 20, and I'm glad I did the 28. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough too, we have more 28 available to us than 20. Now that I own this LC Smith, it's a 20. I'm realizing how hard it is to find 20 gauge ammo that's loaded because I don't have like dies and a reloading setup for 20, but man,
sure.
Apparently I'm going to have to get it.
Yeah. Yeah. You might want to for a vintage 20 like that. Yep.
Yeah.
Especially if you're going to be buying shot and powder and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And the cool thing too, just a random reloading thing, the load, since I'm already shooting essentially a 20 gauge load in my 16s,
right,
all my powders, I shoot like a 20-28 is the powder that I use.
So okay,
the
yes,
load
that's what I'm using
that
too.
I imagine I will use for my 28 gauge will be 20-28. I can use it for the 20 and for the 16 because the 16 gauge load is essentially like a 20. So
sure,
I can use one powder for those three guns and be perfectly fine.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool efficiency.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to, because I think I asked you this, what does your 15-inch length of pull, 15-inch plus length of pull, English grip, 30-inch barreled Zeus 28 gauge, what does it weigh?
It's right at 6 pounds. I put it on a scale.
Okay.
I have a scale sitting right next to me. And the gun happens to be sitting next to me also.
you practice
I feel
your
like
gun
it depends off? On, I don't know if my, yeah, no, I was just looking at it. I don't know if like my battery is maybe getting low on my scale. This is my backcountry hunter. The backcountry hunter in me has a fluid scale for weighing all my stuff.
Sure, sure.
Well, right now on the scale it says 6 pounds, 0.0 ounces. So 6 pounds.
Okay.
It weighs.
Yeah.
Yep.
There you go. Yep. That's you know, again, that's heavier than, so my gun is very similar to yours. I have the Venus, as we were talking about, and mine is like 5 pounds, 5 ounces. So it's like 5 1/4, but, wow. And you get into that six sub 6 pound range. I mean, for a 28, my next one, I'm actually building a Zeus 28, very similar to yours, mainly because I want a little heavier 28 that I will shoot at clays. But also I'm just thinking, I really want to try, now that I've shot a well-fitted kind of featherweight 28 gauge that's 5 1/4 pounds, I want to go back and try shooting a 28 that is a little heavier, like 5 1/2, 5 3, anywhere from 5 1/2 to 6. Like, I don't really care where it's at. I just want to shoot that and just see if I notice anything, because my first RFM was a 20 gauge, and that was 5 3/4 pounds, and that gun I shot as well as any gun I had ever shot before, mainly because it was my first exposure to like a gun that was very well fit to me. So yeah, that was kind of eye opening. Then I went to the 28, this really light 28. And I think there was a little bit of a learning curve to shoot that light of a gun. I really like it, and I do shoot it really well, but I'm just kind of curious now to try the 28 gauge on a little heavier 28 gauge. So that'll be next for me.
Yeah, I think it's a good, I think around 6 pounds is like a good weight. It's kind of hard to get sub 6 pounds with like a moderate, I guess, budget other than like RFM, it seems like. But like to find a, you know, sub 5 pound like vintage gun or a sub 6 pound vintage gun is not the easiest thing to do, especially with like a normal person's budget. I really enjoyed the weight of it. It's the lightest gun I have, so obviously it feels really light to me. But I don't find myself like, man, I wish this thing was a 0.5 pound lighter or anything like that. And it shoots really well. So I'm happy with the way it panned out at 6 pounds and all the specs.
Yeah. Awesome. Gearing up for your next hunt? Check out Ugly Dog Hunting Company for all your dog supply needs. Ugly Dog Hunting carries a full line of products for your bird dog and even some for you. Whether you're looking for dog collars, GPS tracking devices, kennels, beds, leads, training equipment, or first aid supplies, Ugly Dog Hunting carries it and a whole lot more. New owner of the company and Fred of the Birdshot podcast, Mike Nadusky, loves to remind me that while I do hunt with pretty dogs, every dog can be an ugly dog. Check out the entire selection of gear for you and your bird dog at uglydoghunting.com. For many upland hunters, along with their passion for dogs, birds, and the places we chase them, comes a passion for shotguns. Upland Gun Company specializes in customizing shotguns for the upland bird hunter, imported from Italy and shipped direct to an FFL near you. Select from one of their side-by-side or over-under shotgun platforms and customize the fit, function, and aesthetics to your liking. Design and build your next upland hunting shotgun with Upland Gun Company today. Visit uplandguncompany.com.
Well, I got a few more questions. I kind of have more plans to get into talking gear and stuff a little bit more. We haven't even mentioned the fact that you do work for Sitka Gear, and that was one of the other reasons that you and I connected. Obviously, we were talking shotguns first, but kind of talking late season gear and bouncing some ideas off you. And I had been looking for cold weather glove recommendations like a few weeks ago. It's funny now because like this season has been like the least need for cold weather stuff because it's been so mild and so warm and so comfortable. But I did get, so I did this little poll, and I still think I'm planning on doing a gear sort of recap thing, but I was looking for cold weather glove recommendations, and the one that was recommended the most, I put it up on Instagram, was the Sitka Gear Gunner Glove, which I did not have. I have them now. I can see why they're recommended. They're not a super insulated glove, but they're a nice leather glove with windproofing, which based on sort of what I deal with in cold weather, kind of I self-diagnosed Raynaud's syndrome, where you kind of lose sensation in your fingers and you lose circulation and my fingers go numb and it's kind of like, it's just annoying. And eventually I can work my way out of it through exertion and exercise. Circulation comes back, but there's this period of suck usually early in the hunt that just Basically, my fingers are worthless. Like, I don't even know if I could pull the trigger. I know I've missed birds because of it before, because I'm fumbling with my, you know, and I mean, to some extent, like, you know, cold hands, cold, it's part of being outdoors. So like there's a bit of embrace the suck, but like, what can we do to improve that? So anyways, you sent me a pair of the Gunner gloves, which I really appreciate and have been using them. I do think that was a key piece for me, because I was missing a glove that had decent dexterity, but a little bit more of a barrier to the elements. And I think that windproofing, I'm curious to your thoughts, and obviously you have some experience with this, but how you think about windproofing, how you utilize it and its value. And maybe as you jump into that, just give us a little background on kind of how you wound up in the field of sort of technical apparel kind of thing.
Yeah, for sure. I wound up in it, I guess, through backcountry hunting. You know, do a lot of archery elk hunting and rifle mule deer hunting and stuff. I used to spend a lot more time backpacking and backcountry hunting than I do now, as of recent years, just with like tag organization of where I have hunts. But anyways, doing a lot of backcountry hunting for big game. And then moving to Montana, studying marketing, I knew I wanted to work in the hunting and outdoor industry, and luckily wound my way into like a customer service role at Sitka, just kind of like a foot in the door with the company. And then, like, as I finished my degree, ended up moving into marketing and in a little different role in marketing from what I initially started in now. But yeah, so I work in marketing for Sitka Gear, so have a heavy exposure to technical hunting gear every day. But yeah, so as far as the gloves go, thinking about the gloves, you and I talked about this, but I cannot stand wearing gloves. Like, I don't like my fingers being covered, and like just any loss of dexterity or like having to peel my glove off to like check Onyx or something like that. I will like wear no glove, and then I will wear Gunner gloves, because I really like them. I think they're about as warm as a shooting glove can get without being like cumbersome to use. Like, you can't flip your safety anymore. Yeah. And you can't really feel your triggers or something like that. And the wind stopper in there, definitely just keeping wind off of your skin, keeping wind off your fingers, is definitely going to be a huge help in keeping them warm. It's going to be the main thing that like saps heat from people is the wind. But yeah, so do you want me to get into like technical clothing and stuff, or where do you want me to go?
Let's go into that, but I just want to throw in, like, I think you're kind of nailing the, and most people I would maybe be familiar with this, like, that's the sort of the trick with shooting gloves is you know it gets cold, you want some insulation and warmth on your fingers, but there's a limit to, like, we can't just wear big puffy glassing mitts or something.
Yes.
You know, you have to be able to use your shotgun and manipulate it. And so that's where we have this problem that arises in the field. And for me, I would say that even it like kind of exacerbates it. Like, you would think, okay, Nick, you got really cold hands. Just get some really, you know, shoot a single trigger gun, leave your double trigger gun at home and bring a single trigger gun and get some big mitts. And that might work, but honestly, what I find is the way that I sort of struggle with this Renaud is like the circulation. If I put on like big, thick fingered gloves, like any pressure around my fingers, I feel like honestly just makes it worse. Like, it just
really
even cuts off the circuit. Yeah. So even if it's like, and I'm not saying I've tried every option out there. Like, one thing and you'd be able to speak to this, I really like Primaloft insulation. I feel like that is kind of changed the game, and I know it's a higher end insulation. It's very light. It's not real dense. It's just like this really light, fluffy insulation. So I'm always curious if I see items, and whether it's gloves or anything that uses Primaloft insulation, I just find that stuff to be excellent. So, like, maybe there's a glove like that, but I think what I'm realizing is kind of like what you're saying, you know, the Gunner glove with the windproofing and just a nice leather layer, you know, you can only get so warm before you kind of defeat the whole purpose of a shooting glove.
Yeah, they're tough. And that's like the main reason that I don't like usually wear shooting gloves. I run like ultra hot too. So, I have the exact opposite problem of you, is like, I am if I'm moving, I'm hot and I'm probably sweating. So like managing moisture is like being sweat, is my biggest challenge with hunting gear. I don't have to try and keep myself warm very often.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, that's one of the things I love about upland hunting. It's an active sport, and
right.
You really, I don't struggle too often with having, like, you know, my core and stuff is not cold. I don't suffer from the cold other than my extremities, my fingers basically. But to your point, big game, kind of like those folks tend to lean into a little bit more of the technical field apparel and that kind of stuff. And that has, you know, that has fueled the innovation in that industry that then can sort of trickles down. And upland hunting, I would say there's less focus on that, but more and more we sort of, you know, we have exposure to both worlds. Obviously you big game hunt, you upland hunt.
Yeah.
So naturally there's going to be some crossover in that gear. And I think there's definitely some stuff that we can pull from that world and utilize certain products to really improve our experience. Which I have certainly done over the years. My gear and apparel has changed kind of slowly but surely into more technical stuff. But I would say, like you said, my main priority outside of this little finger issue is basically moisture management, making sure that we're breathing and getting rid of heat and moisture so that we don't get soaking wet out there, because that can ruin your day in a hurry.
Definitely. Like, the key to managing most of that is, and just like hunting gear in general, more so in like the big game world and like the backcountry pursuits and stuff, is like, you hear it a lot with like systems thinking or like building a clothing system. So having multiple layers to your clothing system, I think is the key to manage heat and manage moisture for sure. You'll see a lot of stuff, about like 8-piece clothing systems and stuff like that, of like defining the 8 different pieces of gear that you should have with you on most all big game hunts. We don't need to like get too deep into that, 'cause a lot of it doesn't apply to, upland hunting, just because, you know, you're usually doing like maybe a half day, a full day at longest, and you're back at your truck and you're drying out and you're, you know, in a camper or in a hotel room or something, or back home. So it's not as important there as far as like compared to like the backcountry world, where you might not have something to dry your clothes out. Like your body is going to have to dry your clothes out as you sleep.
Right.
But systems thinking can definitely still apply to upland hunting. Starting with like being like a base, a mid, and an outer layer. A lot of times I don't run like true base layers, on like most upland days. Just cause I run so hot, but some kind of like synthetic or merino to move moisture away from your skin is really important. I think one of the, I underlined it when I was thinking about gear for upland hunting, is like stop wearing cotton stuff.
Yeah.
I think people all too often have like, you know, cotton long johns or just wear a cotton t-shirt. They might have like a perfectly technical mid layer or outer layer, and they have a cotton shirt underneath of it that's just like really making it hard for that technical outerwear piece to do its job, because the cotton is just saturated with sweat or moisture if it's raining or something. So like getting away from cotton in a lot of things, I think is pretty important. As far as just staying,
that's a funny one. I wonder like how prevalent that is. And I learned, or at least somebody instructed me, to ditch the cotton way back when I was like, I don't know, 14, 15, going on Canadian fishing trips. And we'd go up there in May, and sometimes it would, you know, a couple trips we'd have, you know, where it's like raining for 2-3 days straight. And like, we didn't, you know, my dad knew the outdoors and to a certain extent, but it was like, we're two young boys and we're going up there fishing and we're wearing hand-me-downs, whatever. But the guy that we went with, I remember he was like huge on merino wool, and he's like, you do not wear cotton. And this is, you know, back a ways. When I was younger, but that just always stuck with me. And so from that point forward, I pretty much have ditched cotton in all of my outdoor pursuits as much as humanly possible. And it's, you very rarely find me wearing anything that's cotton if I'm actually hunting or doing that. And I think that's a huge, huge piece. So if anybody hasn't done that or tried that, I would definitely recommend it.
Yeah, no doubt. It's going to cotton, it soaks in water. It doesn't dry fast.
It just
being wet, yeah. Equals being cold. And man, I remember like some early days of like tromping around in the woods with like blue jeans on, and like your legs will chafe, and it's just like, man, it's uncomfortable. So yeah, like synthetics or merino wools or any kind of wool, I suppose, is better than cotton. But yeah, that's got to be the key. Cotton socks too. Like, man, I don't know when the last time I put a cotton sock on my foot was, but yeah, like merino or synthetics or something just help with your feet so much. Yep. But as
cotton
far as
also
like
stretches and it doesn't really rebound. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to not like about it. You know, it doesn't rebound until you wash it, that kind of thing. And I mean, I think it used to just be, it was very available. Obviously most of us probably have lots of cotton in our wardrobe and closet. So you kind of just wear this stuff. But I would say now, you know, the popularity of sort of synthetic and athletic fabrics and gear, I think like the education level is up quite a bit on that stuff. And again, it doesn't have to be, you know, $100 shirt or this, like there
right.
It's pretty readily available now, and affordable to have at least synthetic stuff.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. Even in just like general athletic wear, you're not going to see much cotton athletic stuff anymore, but do you want me to kind of go through like I guess how I maybe like a like assess conditions and like pick what I would run?
Yeah I think that would be, that's kind of what I was thinking. Like, you know, if you want to use a day for an example, like if it's going to be, you know, 30 degrees or whatever, like how do you approach it?
Right now that's about the conditions of what we have, which is odd for October in Montana, but usually to start with like checking weather, see how cold it's going to be, how windy it's going to be, and how it's going to warm up once the sun comes up and it's, you know, midday. Wind is definitely one that I pay a lot of attention to just for bird hunting in general, but also what I'm going to wear, kind of getting into the windstopper thing, that I'll get to. But, I think another key is just like, I mentioned this, but wearing layers and not having like one big insulated jacket that you either have it on or you have it off and now you're wearing your base layer t-shirt or something maybe.
Right.
Having like a system of layers is important and managing your warmth, and moisture for sure. Starting cold is definitely a key. You know, everybody's guilty of this. It's like, I'm comfortable in the truck. I've got my jacket on. I've got the heat on. It feels cold outside, so I'm going to keep all this gear on. Or I'm going to put another jacket on, and you get like 100 yards out of the truck and you're like, man, I'm pretty hot. Just layering down, starting cold and then layering down. If you feel hot or if you feel cold, just change the layers. Just take the time to do it. I think it's, I get too stubborn about it. I'll start climbing and be like, oh, it's fine. It's not that far. Like I'll just get up this couple hundred feet and it'll plane out and I'll cool back down. But I don't, I just run super hot and I end up sweaty.
Then you're soaking wet and
Then you're wet and it's like, now I've got to manage this and I've got to try and dry out to stay warm. It, like I said, more so in the big game world where I'm going to sit down in glass for hours or something like that. I'm just sitting there still exposed to the elements, but upwind being more of an active, I guess all forms of upland hunting really are active pursuits. So you're hiking around, exerting yourself, you know, creating some sweat and some moisture and some heat. But so check the weather. Just knowing how you run is important too. Like most guys on a 30 degree day will dress differently than I will on a 30 degree day, just because, like I said, I run really warm. But starting with base layers is like, what do I need to initially, I guess, just like as far as like the order of operations of how you'd put your clothes on, starting with like base layers, I usually run like a synthetic or a merino, like boxer of some kind. There's a million good brands out there that make them. I would stick to one of those two. If you are a guy that runs really warm and you know you sweat a lot, synthetics are going to be easier to dry out. Merino keeps you a little bit more, a little warmer while it's wet. And it manages like odor and things better. But as far as a guy that's like really sweaty and you're like constantly dealing with sweat as a problem, synthetics, in my opinion, are like, that's my choice typically. Most folks don't have that issue. So like merino wool ends up being a perfectly fine option for them. But so like 30 degree day, I would wear like a synthetic boxer, a synthetic or a merino top, like a t-shirt usually, or like a long sleeve crew neck. And then I run, it's actually kind of like a earlier season, big game pant that I wear a lot they have side zips. So like hip vents, okay. If you're familiar with like, yep. You know, a lot of big game brands have those, I guess most of them have those now, to where you can open those zippers up and dump heat. I run a pant like that. It's kind of like a lighter to mid-weight pant. Still a pretty durable pant. It's nylon outer face. So like, burrs don't stick to it, and it doesn't get ripped up real easy. So I run kind of like a mid-weight pant, over like my base layer for a top, depending on the day. If it's like a pretty chill day and I know I'm just going for a short hunt and it's not going to like get real windy or like the conditions aren't going to be like real trying or anything, I like to wear like Pendleton flannels. It's wool. Still get to kind of like maintain like a little bit of like the upland style, I guess. I'll wear like a Pendleton wool shirt or something. Yeah. There's like varying weights of them. So like, I think that's a great option if you like to, you know, dress that way when you're bird hunting or look that way. I think Pendleton or like any wool, I guess Stilson and those different brands all make like wool flannels and stuff like that. But on a day where it's like mountain hunting, I don't do it as much. Like if I'm hunting duskies where I know I'm going to climb like 1500 feet or something, I'm going to be like really putting in some work. I wear like an active mid layer. So how you were talking about like Primaloft, active insulations are pretty popular nowadays with like Primaloft, Evolve, I guess, I think it's called, or like a grid fleece. Like you'll see them from any brand like Patagonia, sure, like Orvis and pretty much every brand has like a grid fleece hoodie.
What makes something what makes it active insulation?
Yeah. So, our product folks would be really mad at me if I butchered this. So like there's active, like as far as insulations go, there's like active and statics. So like statics would be insulations for when you're not moving. So like,
sitting in a stand, real sitting glassing. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Down in like the big game world is a big one. Like really great at keeping you warm, traps a ton of body heat. But not going to be great when you start producing moisture. It's not going to manage moisture real well, where an active insulation can still manage that moisture and get it away from your body and essentially stay dry as you wear it, being the difference between active and a static insulation. Being like I said, like those grid fleeces are probably the most common type that you'll see people wearing. Those have been the standard for a really long time. That's a great option for a mid layer or I don't want to like name too many products and just make it sound like it's an ad or something, but things that use like Primaloft Evolve insulations are great. That's like kind of like lofted stuff that you mentioned earlier. You can still hike in it. You can still sweat in it. It's not just going to be trapping a ton of moisture and just like absolutely trapping heat against your body. Good for active pursuits where you're hiking around, being up and hunting. And then like, if it's going to be a really windy day, I will bring like a windstopper shell or some kind of, windstopper is like a laminate technically is what makes it stop the wind. So like windstopper, there's other technologies out there that essentially achieve the same thing, just to keep wind off of me. Cause like wind is going to, especially on like a really windy, cold day here in Montana where it's like, you know, 20 miles an hour and it might be 10, is like 0 to 10 degrees or something. Some wind is going to make it really miserable. So like a lightweight windstopper shell or a shell that has some kind of laminate in it to stop the wind is really important. A lot of times I'll carry those on my bag. So like when I was just grouse hunting the other day, started low, went way up high to like climbed like 1500 feet up to like, I guess it was about like 8,000 feet of elevation in the mountains. I was hot the way up, you know, I was all the way down to my base layer t-shirt. Got to the top and I had like a light windstopper shell on my vest, just attached to my vest, and actually had a flannel in my bag too. Threw my clothes on to go back down because now I'm not like working real hard. That's kind of where the layering system thing comes in, is like I had two other layers to put on when I got to the top and I started coming down. I was just cruising my way back down the elevation. Ran that shell on my bag the way up. And so that's like the base layer, mid layer, outer layer is kind of like the general like scheme of layers that you might need to have upland hunting. And you can kind of like mold those depending on the conditions. You know, you can obviously have a really light base layer, or if it's a really cold day, you can like go up in weight of your base layer, like a heavier weight. Same with mid layers, you could go from like a grid fleece. They might be like a thinner, like lighter insulation up to like a heavier active insulation or something. Like you can kind of just like bend those different things, where you can have like relatively few pieces. But you can do a lot with those different items. Like if you have, you know, a few different options of tops, you can kind of mix and match them and end up getting a lot out of those few items. But, I think the layering thing is important. I see a lot of folks, they have like one good jacket. And I get it. Like technical hunting gear is expensive. Like not everybody can just buy a bunch of pieces of technical hunting gear. So they go for like one warm jacket because you want to be warm, right? So now you've got like an insulated windstopper or like a Gore-Tex or some kind of, waterproof laminate shell. And that thing is warm, like it's hot. And now, like it might be a moderate day of upland hunting. And they've got their jacket for deer hunting, but they're going to wear it regardless. Like that's a good hunting jacket. So they're going to put it on, but it's just way too hot for the application. It's not going to breathe real well. And they're just going to end up sweating out. And it's like, well, now I'm really hot. I need to fully unzip this thing or just take it off. Now I'm sweaty and exposed to like kind of cold temperatures, and it's just going to end up not being all that great. So layering systems, I think are generally really important, in all, not even hunting pursuits, just outdoor pursuits. If you're like, a hiker, a backpacker, a trail runner or something like that, layering systems are key to success in clothing.
Yep. Absolutely. That's a good breakdown. If you had to kind of summarize it, like kind of what I'm gleaning and I guess what I would echo, it's like basically choose your materials and then smart layering.
Yep. Assessing conditions too, like not just going out with way too warm a gear when you know it's going to be 40 degrees, something like that. It might feel cold. It might be 20 in the morning and it's going to warm up. So not necessarily dressing for 20, but dressing for 40, just knowing that it's going to come maybe.
Yeah.
Without putting yourself in like an uncomfortable situation, right? You know, not being, you don't want to be miserable when it is 20, but have it be, passable.
Exactly. Yeah. If that 30 degree mark is kind of, I feel like that's kind of a tipping point. I don't know if it has anything to do with it being around freezing or to sort, like above 30. I mean, I don't have to think too hard about it. I know I'm going to be able to kind of get worked up into a point where I'm going to be comfortable out there. Below 30, you get below 30, get into the 20s, add a little wind. Wind is not nearly as big a factor for me in my grouse hunting as it would be for you out there. So it's not always a top concern. I mean, if it was really cold, like I would say if it's in the teens and real windy, like I might just not be going hunting that day, honestly. And that's part of my, I can sort of hunt when I want to hunt. I have a little bit more flexibility. I don't have to go on Saturday, Sunday, weekend. So I'm lucky in that way. But, if I was out, you can't choose to not hunt out in the wind out west. So I think I have some windstopper stuff, and that definitely comes in handy because a windstopper, you can wear a little bit lighter jacket. It doesn't have to be packed full of insulation, but if you cut that wind, you at least kind of maintain that bubble around your body, which I think is really helpful.
Yeah, and having like a lot of windstopper jackets will have like an armpit zipper in them, so you can open them up and dump heat. The cool thing with jackets like that too, I guess one more thing like to mention is like DWR, durable water repellent treatments that go on the fabrics. Having something that is like a DWR treated, if it's not like raining on you, like actively pouring, like it hardly ever rains here in Montana. If it's raining, most people probably aren't bird hunting. Just having like a little bit of a water repellent on clothing is really important. If you're brushing up against like, whatever,
You got brush on the grass
has
on the trees,
dew on it. Just keeping that water so that water doesn't just soak right into whatever, like maybe mid layer or base layer you have. Definitely going to help keep moisture off of you. DWR is a great thing to have in a mid layer and outer layer, no doubt. You won't really see it in base layers a lot much. Mid layers and outer layers for sure. It's good. And it's just like nobody really wants to walk around in a rain jacket. rain gear is kind of expensive. It's not the most comfortable thing to wear, and they're like fairly fragile. So like wearing them around is usually not people's first thing that they want to do. So DWR will like kind of fill that gap without having to wear a rain jacket around.
Yeah. Good stuff. Man, the other thing, I mean, we're all benefiting from, I guess, the advancement in sort of technical gear is like we've got good sort of good fitting gear, you know, good athletic performance gear. I appreciate that. I remember back, you know, like getting geared up to do some like duck hunting or whatever I was doing with my dad, you know, it was like kind of old school. Like we would have, you like we go buy something. It's like, well, you got to get an XL jacket so we can layer underneath, you know, just stuff that thing full. And I just remember swimming in some of my old hunting clothes. And now you can kind of, you know, you can get the right stuff and have it be a little bit more form fitting. So you don't have clothes hanging off you.
Yeah. Still shoulder your shotgun efficiently and all
exactly
that, you know,
yes
hanging up.
yeah you got no 3 doubt. Inches of jacket, you change your length of pull a little bit.
yeah I feel that just with waterfowl hunting. Like I don't waterfowl hunt much anymore, but I went this last weekend for the first time in a few years. I was like, god, I feel like I got a lot of clothes on because they're just, you know, sitting still in a duck blind. So I brought a bunch of clothes and I'm like, gosh, this is going to be difficult. But
yeah, cool, man. Well okay, I'll give you a second here to, this is your chance to shamelessly plug. You do work for Sitka Gear. Like if you have any, what are kind of your, like your go-to items that you find yourself wearing most of the time when you're up and hunting?
Core lightweight. The series is our base layers is called Core Lightweight. There's synthetics, I guess are truly called the Core Lightweight series. And then there's like the Merino 120 series is like the equivalent of a lightweight.
Okay.
I wear a Core Lightweight top like all the time in some variation. Big game hunting, I wear, it's a long sleeve hoodie. I always have one of those when I'm big game hunting. Upland hunting, I find myself wearing like the crew neck long sleeve or the crew neck short sleeve a lot. It's a great, just a awesome base layer to go with. It's going to, you can apply it to any type of hunting you do if you're a deer hunter also. It's not like you're buying an upland specific product that you're only going to wear for upland hunting. You can, like I run in them and stuff. They're great. That's a really good one. The like Jetstream jacket is a super popular item. It can be used on most hunts other than with the exclusion of like an early, like an August or September hunt. You might not need it out west. Windstopper, lightly inflated, pit zippers, DWR treated. It's really water resistant, not truly waterproof because it's not like a Gore-Tex laminate or a waterproof laminate, but has Windstopper in it.
Yeah.
That's an awesome piece that you can kind of use on most hunts also. Those are some killer ones. The Ambient series, there's like varying weights depending on how cold or hot you run. Ambient hoodies are like on the lighter end of insulation, like weight. That's a great piece. Like those three things I usually have with me. Those are all awesome pieces that if a guy was looking to buy like a couple things from Sitka Gear, those are all pieces that you couldn't really go wrong with. They're kind of like fan favorites, can be put in any hunting situation and work really well.
Yeah. Right on, man. Well, appreciate that information. It's good to pick your brain on that stuff a little bit. And again, I still am kind of planning on doing this little gear episode, so I'll maybe dive into it a little bit more. But I did want to mention that when I did my poll, the Sitka Gunner gloves were the top recommend for cold weather shooting gloves. And
awesome.
So far, my experience with them has been very positive. So
sweet. I'm glad people are digging them. Did you cut the thumb pad off like I told you I do with mine?
I haven't. No, but I saw I saw exactly what you were talking about when I got it. I didn't have any issues. So the first day, I think I was telling you this, I went out and I killed two ruffed grouse the first day I wore them. So maybe they're good luck.
Nice.
Or maybe they just do the job. My first hunt with them was good. But now, honestly, my last hunt that I went out on, it was 40 degrees or 45 degrees and sunny. So I wasn't feeling the need to wear them. But I will again probably here before the season's out.
Yep. Awesome, man. Yeah, they're a great glove. I wear them a bunch as it is, but yeah, I don't know. Like I said, I can't stand wearing gloves as it is. So like seeing like a second layer of leather, I'm like, I could take that off and I can move my safety a little better. Not that I had any issues with it before. Just me being weird and like screw with stuff that someone put a bunch of effort into making really nice. And then here I am at home cutting it up.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, did you cook those huns with the skin on yet or not yet?
I haven't yet. No, I'm planning on it this week. I'm excited to try it. You obviously saw the video. My wild game cooking is very underdeveloped and I don't explore into new stuff very often. So I need to, so I'm excited to try those guys.
I smiled when I saw that because I'm kind of the same. Like I don't know. I'm just not that experimental when it comes to stuff. I stick to what I like. But that said, I have in the last couple of weeks, I did pluck a few rough grouse entirely with the skin on, and I've been kind of working on trying some different roasts. And I did one last night with like a butter rub, kind of softened up some butter and mixed it with this actual butter garlic dry rub and smeared that all over it and cooked it. And my son and I, my 5-year-old and I, we ate that and he said it was very good. So for me, it was really good, but it was my first attempt. So immediately I was like, oh, I know how I could do this better next time.
Yeah.
But I really did like it. So
yeah, I might have to pick your brain on the rough grouse stuff. Unfortunately, the two birds that I shot were pretty shot up. I wanted to try and keep them, pluck them, and keep them whole, but they were a little bit shot up, so they ended up just getting breasted and kept the legs and stuff. But I'm gonna have to pick your brain on how to cook them because I haven't cooked any rough grouse before.
I mean, I have not done a whole lot of the plucking in the past, but I've obviously been curious about it, and it's interesting. I'm glad I'm doing it now. There's definitely something there, and rough grouse legs, I mean, the thighs on rough grouse are really good. Even if however you're cooking them, it's just like a nice extra morsel. I'm in the same spot. I'm trying to push the envelope a little bit with my wild game cooking.
Yeah.
There's lots of good resources for doing that.
There you go. Podcast idea.
There you go.
How to just fry your upland birds. That's all I do. Like bread and fry them. Yeah, how to do something new.
All right, buddy. Well, appreciate all of the time today. I'll throw your social media handle in the show notes if anybody wants to ping you on shotguns or Sitka gear or anything like that. But appreciate it. It was fun catching up with you. Good luck the rest of the way, the rest of your season. And man, thanks for taking the time.
Yeah, thank you. It was fun.
All right, buddy. Hang on with me for just a second. That does it for this episode of the Birdshot Podcast. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Birdshot Podcast presented by Onyx Hunt, Final Rise, and Upland Gun Company. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, and share. And if you really love the show and want to contribute above and beyond what you already do by listening, you can sign up at patreon.com/birdshot. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on the next episode of the Birdshot Podcast. Onyx Hunt is the number one hunting GPS app. Join millions of other hunters who trust Onyx Hunt to find more game, discover new access, and hunt smarter. Onyx Hunt shows you nationwide public and private land boundaries. They've got topographic and 3D maps. You can track your route, location, and elevation profile. You can save maps for offline use and take Onyx Hunt with you wherever you go. The most comprehensive hunting tool you'll own. Download the Onyx Hunt app today and use the promo code BSP20 to save 20% on your next Onyx Hunt subscription. Know where you stand with Onyx.
Hey everyone, this is Nick from the Gundog It Yourself podcast. If you enjoyed this show, then you might want to check out my show as well. We highlight and break down the ins and outs of training your own hunting dog. Whether it's a bird dog or even the occasional hound dog episode, we cover all topics related to hunting dogs. Check out Gundog It Yourself on any podcast streaming platform and hit the subscribe button to be sure not to miss any future episodes.